Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Wednesday, August 31st, 2016. I am Jason Powell. Yes, August is almost over. I am here with an audio review of the WWE SmackDown show that took place on Tuesday night in Dallas, Texas at American Airlines Center. I guess we need to be calling it SmackDown Live is the official name. And this show had its moments. I liked some of the in-ring action that they had. There's some flaws with some of the characters that I'm seeing. I thought the follow-up with the Miz and Daniel Bryan segment was interesting in that it was very minimal. They were advertising that Daniel Bryan would address Miz. Never happened. In fact, on the Talking Smack show, Daniel Bryan made it seem like they're not allowed to be on the same set. Now, what they could be doing is setting it up so that Miz ends up crashing the set and it feels like it's a shoot again, like he's not supposed to be there, just kind of building it up that way. However, I did, as I was watching that, he seemed, it's Daniel Bryan, he came off sincere, but who knows. I couldn't help but think back to when Steve Austin ended up cutting a promo that led some people to think that he might be facing Brock Lesnar in a WrestleMania match, and Austin ended up having to pull back on that, and Vince McMahon wasn't happy because it was giving people false hope for a match that wasn't going to occur. And so I just wonder if that's the reaction that Vince had to the Talking Smack segment. Now, they did have a replay of that and everything, so it's not like they're at the top of the show even. So they set the stage, for Miz, and I guess kind of a different type of character, which I think is a major positive. But yeah, I couldn't help but wonder if, like, all right, is this something that they're trying to avoid it going forward? They felt like they're building up expectation for something that's not going, they're not going to be able to deliver. Or are they just kind of trying to build anticipation for the next time when these two actually do get together in the on that show or on SmackDown, and I'm just not quite sure. But let's work our way through this. I'm going to be using Jake Barnett's live review at ProWrestling.net as kind of my outline for this. Jake reviewing SmackDown Live as it happens every Tuesday at ProWrestling.net. So if you are watching the show and you want some instant analysis on things, or you can't see the show and you want to know what the heck is going on, ProWrestling.net and Jake Barnett have you covered. They open things up with that Talking Smack recap of the Daniel Bryan and Miz segment. And if nothing else, you got to say, I think that put the show on the map for a lot of people, kind of gave them now you're not going to get that every week, but I like the show. It kind of gives talent a chance to go out there and put things in their own words. And I think that's always a positive. And it's, like the diehards know about it and they've been plugging it before, but this was kind of the first major thing that got people actually really paying attention and watching that footage and everything else. But Daniel Bryan was backstage and Shane McMahon actually told him that he thinks he owes Miz an apology. And he said that he can't be getting in the face of talent. And Bryan said he wouldn't be so honest next time. But he found the advice from Shane ironic since he has a beef with Brock Lesnar right now. And so I like that because that would have been the obvious thing that we would have been picking apart today if, like, Shane says that and they just kind of, Daniel Bryan doesn't respond with that line. And so well done. And Shane, so I don't know if they're building any sort of tension between Shane and Daniel Bryan. I doubt it, but I just like that they kind of covered that base. Miz ended up coming out and asked for his music to be cut. He was wearing a suit, and Jake wisely pointed out that, I didn't even pick up on this, Maurice was wearing a more conservative black dress, and he says it signifies a change in the tone of their characters. Thank God, because I was so worried when they announced Miz TV with Dolph Ziggler coming up on SmackDown. I'm like, oh no. You're not going to follow up in a positive way. It's going to go right back to the A-lister Miz material, and they didn't. This was hyped as a Miz TV segment, but I don't even know that they needed to do that. It's just it easily could have been positioned as a Miz promo that Dolph Ziggler interrupted. But Miz did admonish the crowd for booing him and said it only took 148 days to get their attention. And he said he would restore the prestige of the Intercontinental Championship, which has been tarnished by quitters who are serial losers And he said that he has a soft style because he doesn't like to get hit in the face, but that's what makes him a good champion. And right there, I couldn't help but think back to I think it's the pre-show with Booker T. I believe it was Booker, of all people, because Booker, there's a lot of times I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? And in this case, it was either him or Jerry Lawler who made the comparison to Muhammad Ali. It's like, he didn't like being hit in the face either. And I think you can say that about Floyd Mayweather Jr., you know, a champion who avoids it. I kind of wish they'd make it seem like it's more strategy on Miz's part and kind of pull back on the comparisons between the styles. Make this more about, just strategic. Make this more of a strategic thing for Miz. And don't make it so much about getting hit in the face as much as he's not going in there and working that aggressive style that Daniel Bryan and others do, because it's a different approach, but it's a good one and that he's had success with. Miz said the fans don't know what it's like in the back. He just talked about how WWE calls him to do a commercial, if there's a movie role, to play a chicken. He said he didn't spend the first 10 years of his career playing VFW halls in front of 50 people. And he said then the crowd cheers for guys who fail after getting opportunity after opportunity. And he doesn't get injured and does it night after night, year after year. And then Dolph Ziggler did interrupt him. So again, I don't know why they felt the need to position this as a Miz TV segment. It just could have been, can't Miz just cut a promo? But Dolph Ziggler ends up interrupting and says that Miz had some good points, but people see right through him. And he said everyone in the back fights to be the best, and Miz just wants to be famous. And he said Miz is content with holding up the facade and walking down red carpets holding a title, and it's all for the cameras. And he told Miz that if he wants to prove something to fans and to his wife and to himself that and that he's not a coward, they could do it right now. And he said he doesn't need a title shot, referees, anything. Just gave Miz a chance to fight him and prove that he isn't a coward. Well, Miz teased it and, of course, backed away. Ziggler did take the mic and say that Daniel Bryan and everyone else was right. Miz is nothing but a soft, safe coward. And there was a line in there again about how Miz doesn't like to be hit in the face. I don't want to see some variation of that character that he was playing briefly that didn't, it was kind of the A-lister doesn't want to be hit in the face, the moneymaker. I hope they're not going there. I don't think they are. But, number one, I applaud the fact that Miz is doing something other than the A-lister, because it really did make him just a mid-card guy. And I think he's shown that he can be more than that, especially on a SmackDown brand that lacks star power. And I think they need that Intercontinental Championship to mean something. And with Miz, it's just he was a pest heel. I'd like to see him become more than that. And I've been saying that for a while. And so hopefully that's a step in the right direction. Ziggler was fine. I know Wade Keller over the torch. I had TweetDeck open last night, and he was talking about questioning who else would, who else is wearing stonewashed jeans right now other than Dolph Ziggler. And my first reaction, I hate to say it, is wait, have you been to an indie show? There's probably some people on your Twitter feed wearing stonewashed jeans. But anyway, maybe Wade just has more faith in wrestling fan fashion than I do. Not all of you. Just some of you. And hey, you're talking to a guy who, or you're listening to a guy who wears t-shirts put it this way. I've never met a pair of cargo shorts that I didn't like. So I'm far from a fashion plate. I'm with you, folks. Dean Ambrose and Baron Corbin was hype for later in the show. And then we got just more hype for the upcoming segments. And then they went to a commercial. When they came back, we had the first of two matches that were tag title tournament matches. We saw the brackets. If you thought they were saving American Alpha and the Usos for the finals of the tournament, you're very wrong. They're on the same side of the bracket. So you have those teams. And then on the other side of the bracket, you have the Hype Bros, who really haven't done much. The Vaudevillains, who were at least NXT Tag Team Champions, even though that's something that they don't make a big fuss over on the main roster. And then you have the Headbangers returning to a WWE ring for the first time in 16 years, yet for some reason they get a shot. And then you have Heath Slater and Rhino, the makeshift team. Like, who came up with these brackets? My God. But I'll get into what I think is happening a little bit later. The Hype Bros ended up winning, and they did. They got some interview time afterward, and Ryder said that the hype train has left the station, and Raleigh gave an approximation of a coked out 80s promo about staying hyped, as Jake wrote. And then they celebrated afterward. It hit me. I'm watching this going, and I wrote about it in the hit list today. My personal hell would be the hype bros facing bromance and having, you know, just match promo for all eternity. So, yeah, that and of course, with DJZ, that crap. Oh, my God, I can't even imagine. Not big on the hype bros. Not really feeling this, but, I mean, SmackDown needs bodies. And, it's Zack Ryder really wasn't. I really wasn't buying into Zack Ryder's singles push anyway. But, yeah, I can't say that the hype bros are doing much of anything for me. Then it was, after this, we ended up with AJ Styles backstage walking up to Apollo Crews. AJ, he really does look like an 80s jock villain. 80s movie jock villain is what I wrote last night on Twitter. I stand by that. He puts that headband on and the hair goes all over and he just looks a little bit goofy. And I'm not crazy about that. I don't like that AJ is kind of a comedic figure at times. I think it's, I wish they would pull back on that. Again, we'll talk more about that as we get to what they did with him in the final segment. But AJ was just, he pretended not to know who Apollo Crews was. And so Crews spelled out his name for him, and Styles reminded him that it isn't a spelling bee, and he's the face that runs the PLACE. So I like that Styles is, I mean, they're clearly building up to a John Cena and AJ Styles match somewhere down the road. With AJ, you know, wearing the wristband that John Cena left in the ring and really gloating about being the face that runs the place and all of this. So at some point, when John Cena is done with filming his reality show, the American Grid show, it could be later this year, could be Royal Rumble, or say it's something they save for WrestleMania. I think we're going to see that match again. I wouldn't be surprised if it is WrestleMania, because, you know, you could have AJ in the midst of a long title reign at that point, if they give it to him anytime soon, and then Cena comes back, and, I mean, they work so well together, and by that point, the match is going to feel fresh, and even if for those of you going, well, I don't know, we've seen it a lot lately, we've only seen it a couple of times, really, and we saw a six-man tag with them both involved, and by then, it's going to feel fresh. It will. Anyway, we had AJ Styles then make his entrance. I think this was coming out of another commercial break. And he was wearing the headband. I think the idea is that it's a wristband that he wears on his head. I think that's the gimmick here. And we did hear he would be on Talking Smack later. He boasted again about being the face that runs the place and the face that beats up John Cena. And he also boasted that he beat Cena at SummerSlam. And I'm like, oh, Cena going to come out? Because he was there. He was at the house show the night before. He ended up working the dark match on this show, but he never came out. When they didn't advertise him on the pre-show, I'm like, well, maybe they're going to do a surprise thing, but I think that would be a mistake. And I think you want to make a big fuss over John Cena's return. Surprised we didn't get that. But he said he would face... he would be the face of Dean Ambrose's nightmares when he is crowned WWE champion. Crews ended up interrupting, and Styles asked if he wanted to challenge him to another spelling bee, and Crews said that he went to Daniel Bryan and got permission to challenge him to a match, and so that led to their match. Real quick on the Cena thing, it's weird that while AJ's talking about him, there's not a huge fuss being made over, boy, you know, where is John Cena? What did that mean when he left the wristband in the ring? I don't think they're doing nearly enough there. I would have used him. Now, my guess is that the significance is that Cena, I mean, he did say he's been waiting. He's actually hoping that someone steps up and becomes that guy. And I wonder if the idea is that he gave AJ a chance to be that guy, and he wasn't. And now he's coming back to prove it. You know, he's going to beat AJ Styles at WrestleMania or wherever. I wonder if that's where this is going. But I still wish you have access to John Cena, even not for, you know, maybe not for long, but I guess, boy, I'd find a way to get him on the show and maybe find a way, if that's the direction they're going with this, let him lay that out. You know, but nothing from John Cena last night. Apollo Crews interrupted, and I'm sorry, I already got to that point. Now it's time for the match, and it was AJ beating Apollo Crews. He used a phenomenal forearm. I enjoyed the match. I think, I mean, AJ, I mentioned this in the hit list too. I mean, as far as his promos go, I may not like the comedic elements that they're. He just looks a little goofy, and I'd rather see AJ be positioned strongly. But as far as his promos are concerned, man, does this guy have some confidence right now that's just been lacking throughout his entire career. As you know, and he became a good promo in TNA, and when he came to WWE, he looked nervous, and now he just looks like a guy who's just letting loose. It's just like he's not thinking about what his next line is or anything like that. AJ's doing a great job, and of course he's awesome in the ring. And Cruz, he looked good in defeat, but I don't know that Cruz gains much from this. I mean, I thought, you know, they had a good match, but I don't know that anyone's really looking at Apollo Cruz any differently. He's just kind of that guy who wins some matches and loses to the stars, kind of a thing right now. Then we ended up with Renee Young interviewing Heath Slater and Rhino at Heath Slater's modular home, his trailer. They had a heavy set blonde woman, and that was playing the role of Heath's wife, and she ended up serving like crackers with cheese whiz, and Jake, I missed this. Jake said Vienna sausages too, and Renee tried to talk to basically about Slater being the last guy that on draft night, how he wasn't drafted. His wife interrupted and said they would be eating pizza crust for dinner. And then Heath recalled some embarrassing moments in his search for a contract. And then there were some fat jokes about his wife thrown in. And Renee asked Rhino why he decided to be Heath's partner, and he just kind of shrugged. And then Heath said Rhino was helping provide for his children, and then who were outside, by the way. And then also you hear tire screeches, and then Heath runs out. I guess the idea is that like his kids were taking his car without permission or something. And as Jake wrote, Rhino kind of gave Renee a creepy look with his eyes, and the segment ended. And they did hype after that Bray Wyatt would be addressing Randy Orton coming out of the commercial break. I gave this a hit because I got to admit, I chuckled. It had more to do with just the ridiculousness of watching Rhino eat cheese whiz and crackers. Hey, sometimes you can't help what you laugh at. Well, you just can't. You can't help it what makes you laugh. Would I want to see this on a regular basis? No. I think there's a better story to tell with Heath Slater that isn't so Vince McMahon ha-ha, where you want to say that he comes from this type of a background. Cool, but don't make it demeaning for those who live that lifestyle, and don't make it. I think there's. I want them to be a little more serious with Heath Slater as well. I mean, I don't want to come off as a guy who doesn't enjoy any comedy in wrestling because, like I say, I got a kick out of this in some ways, and I really actually got more of a kick out of Rhino in this segment than I ever have at any point in his WWE career. So I gave it a hit just for the silliness of it all, but it's not the approach I would take with Heath Slater. I would try to tell a more serious story and get fans invested in cheering for him, wanting to see him succeed, wanting to see him get this contract. So I wouldn't go with the, oh, you know, here's the heavy set wife and laugh at her because she's heavy set. And I wouldn't go there. I just would tone it down. And if you want to make it seem like this guy, you know, doesn't have much, I mean, what does that say about WWE though? Maybe I guess I would like show Heath Slater like in his supposed childhood home and make that look a little rough, you know, something like that, but not play up the comedy part of it. But you know, again, it did make me laugh a little. From there, we went to Bray Wyatt making his entrance, and he's the, you know, he's fear. He fears no snakes, monsters. He said Randy Orton thinks he has venom running through his veins, like he does, and he said that excites him. And he ended up talking about how at one point he started talking about how he was going to remove the head of the serpent. And I'm like, so he's going to chop Randy Orton's head off? Is that what he's saying? Bray's not doing much for me with some of these promos. And I feel for him. He's a guy with tremendous talent that WWE just doesn't do a great job with. And I'd like to think that, well, this is a step in that direction. But he's facing Randy Orton, who's coming off a loss to Brock Lesnar. I don't know that this is going to go well for Bray Wyatt. I mean, it may be a lengthy feud, but Bray Wyatt's had a lot of lengthy feuds. He's won some matches in those feuds. He's lost some, but when push comes to shove, he loses the feud. And I'll be surprised if that isn't the case here with Randy Orton. Orton did come out, and he's wearing pants. which Randy Orton didn't do for a long time in his WWE career, at least on television. But he comes across more. There's a different quality to him where before he just kind of had the dead eyes and delivered, pretty straightforward promos, and now there's a little bit more. You can relate to Randy Orton a little bit more with the approach. He's a little bit more endearing for the audience, and I think it's working. It's not a dramatic shift. I mean, when he first came back, that first promo, I was like, wow, this guy's like ultra nice babyface. He's not that, but he's it, this is I like what they're doing with Randy. I like the approach he's taking with the promos and things. And he just said that Orton said Wyatt has his attention, and Wyatt said that this is the Orton he wanted to see, but that he was not the predator in this situation. He said Orton should know better than anybody what a predator does best in Kill and at Backlash. This is where he said he would cut the head off the serpent and put it on his mantle, like the trophy that it is. I'm like, you're not going to cut Randy's head off at Backlash. Sorry, just not going to happen. But they went back and forth for a little bit, and when Randy teased getting in the ring, the lights went out, and that was it. And Bray Wyatt disappeared. He, like, okay, I'm not. I don't know the parlor trick of Bray Wyatt or whatever that's supposed to be. Doesn't do anything for me. So when the lights go out, I mean, I like it when the lights go out and come back on, and you've had Wyatt family members in the ring around ringside. That's kind of cool. But as far as him just disappearing. Not really. Then we got some hype for the women's tag match that was coming up after the break. Nikki Bella sat in on commentary for this, and it was Alexa Bliss and Natalya beating Becky Lynch and Naomi. What happened was Carmella ended up coming out and attacking Nikki again, and Becky Lynch was distracted by this and rolled up by Alexa for the win. I liked that Alexa got her win back after losing last week. I think they need to. I was worried they were just going to treat her like a scrub. Problem is, when you beat someone on a roll-up by distraction, it doesn't mean anything. It happens to Becky Lynch all the time. I know Jake got into that in his review as well. It's not like anyone's remembering that Alexa Bliss got this win. I mean, they can bring it up next week and have them in a one-on-one match or something. But another thing I want to see, I like what they're doing with Carmella and Nikki still. It's, I mean, good, believable, hard-hitting attacks that Carmella's delivering on Nikki. I like that. But they have this six-pack challenge coming up for the new women's championship on SmackDown. I want to get me into that. I mean, they keep having these tag matches, baby faces against heels. We're not that far away from the pay-per-view now. You guys are making me feel like it's every woman for herself, and they all covet this championship, and so friendships kind of go out the window. They're not creating that vibe at all. It's all about Carmella and Nikki Bella right now. Then we ended up with we got a as Jake put a crash course on the Headbangers. I did have to laugh as I was watching this. I can't remember what the exact line was, but it was something about how they were going to show you the type of impact that the Headbangers had on the Attitude Era. And at that point, my first thought, I can't help it, was that the screen's about to go black for 30 seconds. I'm sorry. I mean, nothing against these guys. It sounds like they're good guys, and the Headbangers didn't have a real impact in the Attitude Era. I'm sure they had a cult following, but it wasn't like they were a meaningful part of that era. I didn't have any. I just when they announced they were coming back, I mean, the buzz had been out there that they were, and I'm like, really? We'll see. And then they announced it, and I'm like, my God, this has got to be something strange. I wasn't sure what they were going for. But they had the Headbangers lose to Heath Slater and Rhino. And somehow you had both Slater and Rhino bleeding, and I think it was Rhino to take an elbow to the head. He ended up with some stitches or staples or something. I think it was just stitches that WWE put it out there. I'm not sure what happened with Slater. But, I mean, they talked about how the Headbangers haven't been in a WWE ring in 16 years. I don't know how much wrestling they're doing. I wouldn't want to be asked to go out there and work with guys who aren't working on a regular basis, and are that age. And it's nothing against the Headbangers, but so I don't know if you can attribute any of the. I mean, it could have been if there was blood on both. It could have if because they did ask Slater how both of. I think it was Daniel Bryan asked how did both of you end up bleeding in the same match or something like that. And if so, I'm not sure where if Slater's was just coming from Rhino, and Jake mentioned the same possibility, But Rhino's was certainly legit. I mean, it could have been something Rhino did. I'm not quite sure, but still, that's putting the talent in kind of a tough spot to go out there and work with guys who aren't active, like the Headbangers. But cool for the Headbangers. I'm happy they got a booking. I mean, they did a post-show interview with, I think it was Renee. You know, they were interviewed by somebody. Maybe it was JoJo. They were interviewed by someone after I saw the video, and they were kind of in character, and then they snapped out of character. They want to do more in WWE. I don't know why WWE would. I mean, these guys are like 45 years old, 45 plus, and if they meant more, if you know, it's like you could make money with them, it'd be different. But I don't see any money in the Headbangers. I didn't see any money in them back in the day, so this was really strange. And again, the idea that we're gonna bring in a team that hasn't been in a WWE ring in 16 years out of nowhere and just put them in our tournament. It doesn't make your tournament look very prestigious. But what I think they're doing with the tournament is they're going to have Slater and Rhino go to the finals. And, you know, I don't know what's going to, I'm guessing on the other side of things, maybe the Usos get by American Alpha some way. And then, so is the idea that we're supposed to be behind Slater, which I'm all for, because that's the direction the fans are going in anyway. And maybe the Usos do something with Alpha heelish, and then they, you know, just deprive Slater, and we're supposed to hate the Usos, or hell, Slater and Rhino go over and it drives the Usos insane. You know, I'm not sure, but it's very strange as far as those brackets are concerned. But I think something like that is happening. So I guess, the next round we're going to get Alpha facing the Usos and then the Hype Bros against Slater and Rhino. If they want to turn the Hype Bros heel, this is a good way to do it. I don't know how many people are going to be cheering for the Hype Bros when they face Heath Slater and Rhino. AJ Styles sat in on commentary, and then all of a sudden, there was some guy in the ring. He was like wearing a dress clothes with a tie, and he introduced himself as Gary the Milkman Milliman. So someone has been watching AWA footage, and he said he wasn't going to leave the ring until someone entered and got some from him. And I got some, I think he meant fight, but then he stripped down to his like white underpants. I'm not talking boxers, as Jake wrote, tighty whities. And then all of a sudden he just waited for someone to come out, and I'm like, all right, are you really going to think about this? If you're some drunken fan and yeah, I want to do this too, I don't think there's gonna be too many issues with it. But still, I'm just like, what are they doing here? Kane comes out. And he just choke slams this guy in his underwear. And I guess this was done so that Kane could leave and cross paths with Baron Corbin for the main event. Because that's, as Kane's leaving, Corbin walks past him and they trade looks. And I will say, I like the idea of Corbin working with Kane. You know, it's a, Kane is obviously the most tenured veteran on the roster as far as like full-time work is concerned. This guy, it's amazing that he's still going. But he and so he can teach Corbin a lot. It's one of those things that I guess I is it makes a lot of sense on paper. It's I think it's a good move. I don't need to see a TV feud between them, but maybe they can make it work. I don't know. It's one of those things like, yeah, do it on the house shows, but we'll see. Then Dean Ambrose made his entrance for the main event. It was Baron Corbin apparently beating Dean Ambrose by DQ, and I don't remember if they announced it this way. Jake came to the same conclusion that I did, though, when I saw it, because it was you had AJ Styles going for a kick on Dean Ambrose, and Dean ended up ducking the kick, and AJ hit Corbin instead. And so I'm guessing this was probably one of those we're not going to announce a finish type thing. But if you really think about it, I mean, yes, Styles was trying to help Corbin. I mean, he's really just targeting Dean. So, I mean, not that it matters, but the idea is that, well, you know, you can't blame Corbin for being kicked. You can't disqualify Corbin for being kicked in the face by AJ. So that would be, because someone did ask in the comment section, like, how is that the DQ in favor of Corbin? And I mean, they've done this many times before. But, yeah, and then, okay, so, and by the way, Corbin, Ambrose, well, good job. I think they made a mistake here. I think WWE is really banking on everybody watching all of their major, like the pre-shows, and then watching, you know, obviously the main show, and then sticking around for Talking Smack in SmackDown's case. The pre-show had a really good video package on Baron Corbin. And I don't remember seeing it on SmackDown itself. And when I saw it on the pre-show, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to sit through this again. This is pretty good. And they're going to do something, you know, because they announced the match with Ambrose. And I'm like, well, maybe they're going to try to do a little something with Baron Corbin now. And that's cool. They need to. I didn't, you know, with AJ challenging Ambrose, it's like they're not going to go too far as an Ambrose and Corbin feud. But it doesn't mean they can't do something with Corbin. But he you know, this was a good outing. I wasn't like you saw anything here made you go, ooh, Corbin's the wrong guy. You know, they've got to pull back on this guy. I thought it was a good outing for him. But, yeah, I guess he just slides into a program with Kane, I'm guessing. And the continuation of the Ambrose and Styles thing was that after the match, you had Ambrose taking Corbin out with dirty deeds, and then Styles tried to go for the phenomenal forearm, but Ambrose caught him and crotched him on the top rope. And then Styles just sat there, and Ambrose bounced him up and down a few times and then shook his hand because, you know, AJ was in so much pain he couldn't really do anything. And then Dean walks off with the title. So, yeah, the idea is that AJ, well, I mean, they basically just, this was the type of humor that I think works for the Ambrose character with the right opponent. I don't like AJ doing that type of humor necessarily. It'd be one thing if AJ was very, you know, it was a more of a straightforward heel all the time and he did this. But, I mean, this is a guy who he really does. He looks like an 80s movie jock villain when he wears that headband. And there's just still kind of a goofiness to his character that I think is wrong. I mean, I do assume they're going to put the championship on AJ Styles, and SmackDown needs a strong face of the brand. John Cena is a part-time guy now, and so John Cena is always going to mean something on the brand, but I think SmackDown needs a strong champion. I don't see Dean Ambrose as a strong champion. AJ can be that, but I think they need to kind of be conscious of the manner in which they're pushing him, the comedic nature, because I don't want AJ Styles just to be another pest heel. And beating John Cena clean, I mean, that should have been a launching point for him to be a respected heel. And I think a lot of fans obviously respect AJ, but the way he's been on television since then, again, has that goofiness to it that makes it a little tougher to at least respect his character, if you know what I'm saying. So, you know, overall, the show, as I said at the top, you know, it had its moments. It wasn't a bad show. They're still making good use of the limited roster that they have. I think they can do better with the women. The tag team tournament matches did not get me excited about, you know, the tournament itself going forward. But then I just have to think, well, we're going to see Elf and the Usos, and that's going to be fun to see where that goes. Beyond that, I guess it's kind of about Slater and Rhino. I mean, they can't have the Hype Bros win. So I assume Slater and Rhino are going to the finals, and it's, you know, it is what it is. But, yeah, the women, they've got to do a better job of setting up that tournament between the women to mean something rather than just, hey, here's a six-way match with these women who always have tag matches. Well, whatever, yawn. Trying to think if there was anything else of note coming out of Talking Smack. You can read John Moore's full recap of Talking Smack. AJ was on there, and he was a little, you know, he was a lot more likable. Really wasn't selling up the being in agony, I guess, of Vince McMahon's latest ball joke. There wasn't much of that or anything like that. But yeah, check out John's full recap of that. And hey, if you are interested in hearing full-length audio reviews like this one, know that we have a ton of them at ProWrestling.net. I went roughly 50 minutes on WWE Raw coming out of the show on Monday night. Zach Zimmerman, you guys hear him do the NXT and Cruiserweight Classic audio reviews sometimes on the All Access side. Know that if you may hear one on the All Access side, but both are available coming out of those shows on Thursday mornings. Yeah, I believe tomorrow you're actually going to hear the Cruiserweight Classic audio review here on the All Access side, but Zach will be recording the NXT audio review exclusively for members, and so just tons of audio content. I'm actually going to be getting together with Jake Barnett again this week, 2 weeks in a row for Jake and I, for the .NET Weekly audio show, available on Thursday. We'll be running through all the news of the week, and looking forward to getting together with Jake again, so look for that on Thursday afternoon on the member side of things. If you are interested in membership, Then visit the main page at ProWrestling.net. Look for the sign-up area. You'll find three different pricing options. $7.50 will get you in the door. That's our monthly rate, but you can knock some off of that price by taking advantage of the six-month or annual membership options. The annual membership brings it all the way down to an average of $5.50 per month. And as I always say, hey, please take a moment to subscribe to this daily podcast. Rate and review us on iTunes. Help spread the word any way you can. When I put out the link on the at Pro Wrestling Net Twitter page, a simple retweet is very helpful, and a big thanks to everybody who has done that. I will be back, I don't know when, here on the All Access side. Most likely sometime early next week. So, everybody in the U.S., have a great holiday weekend, and I will talk to you soon. Take care.